Former President Trump is trying to rally Republicans as the midterm election season gets underway. Here he is Saturday in North Carolina.
This is the year we're going to take back the House, we're going to take back the Senate, and we're going to take back America. And in 2024, most importantly, we are going to take back our beautiful, beautiful, beautiful White House.
Trump is hoping his endorsements can help Republicans win in November, but at least two candidates he's backed have dropped out of their races. Still, recent polls suggest the former president's support among Republican voters remains very high. A new book, edited by our regular guest, Julian Zelizer, takes a longer view of Trump's presidency. Zelizer and 17 other historians have written what they call a first draft of history, taking stock of the Trump presidency. It's called The Presidency of Donald J. Trump, A First Historical Assessment, and Julian Zelizer is here to talk more about it. Good to have you, Julian. Thank you.
Thank you, and nice to be with you.
It's great to have you. You call this book a work of contemporary history, and before we get into it, I wonder what you make of how Trump himself is trying to write the legacy of his presidency, especially as we see him out doing rallies again and endorsing candidates. How is he defining Trumpism on the campaign trail?
Well, he's done this throughout his presidency and post-presidency. I mean, the election ended with him trying to redefine a one-term presidency into a stolen election. And I think since then, he's really working hard to try to make sure that historians, journalists, and the public see him as a successful president who was a negotiator in chief, so to speak, and often saying things that are directly at odds with the facts. And his interview with us, which took place for this book, was one example of that.
Right. Tell me more about that. What was that interview like?
Well, he contacted me, or his people did, after reading about the project, and he spent about a half hour primarily talking about all the different negotiations he did with NATO, with the pharmaceutical companies that are not recognized and should be recognized. And he was really trying to persuade us why we should essentially write about him in a favorable light. I mean, it was a salesman dealing with historians and treating us the same way. So it was a bit surreal. And then in some moments, like January 6th, when he was telling us it was Antifa and Black Lives Matter that were really at the heart of it, he was just going against the very clear record of what happened.
And in writing this book, Julian, you say that writing about contemporary history poses a big challenge, especially when the subject is as unconventional and divisive as Trump. And you pose this great question. You write, how does one write about a president who uttered words appealing to white nationalists and incited a violent insurrection against the U.S. Congress, but do so in analytical language one might use to describe tax policy? And you ask, do we risk normalizing behavior that departed so dramatically from democratic traditions? And it's such a great question you pose. I think journalists have to struggle with it as well. What's the answer for historians?
Well, I think the contributors to our book try to put everything that happened in a bit longer term perspective. So rather than writing about the day-to-day drama that was very real, we try to understand, how does the former president's stand on immigration and the rhetoric he used about immigration fit into a 20 or 30 year bigger context picture of what's happened to the GOP and immigration politics? Similarly, with the media, we know how he would really use the conservative media as a platform in ways that were often unconventional, but we try to show it comes from somewhere. It's been building to the time that he became president. And so it's a challenge, but I think our contributors did a pretty good job to help make sense of those 4 years.
Yeah, I was impressed in the chapter that you wrote where you talk about his turbulent presidency, how it shone a light on the state of the Republican Party in the 21st century, and that he exposed how the GOP in many ways was already on this road toward radicalization, that people like Newt Gingrich, the former Republican House Speaker, and movements like the Tea Party were already acting kind of Trumpy before Trump came along, right? Can you expand on that a little bit?
Yeah, the purpose of that essay is to say Donald Trump wasn't just a cause of what we saw in the modern GOP, he was a product of it. Right. And the Republican Party has radicalized since the 1980s in two ways. One, in terms of policy as a whole, the party has shifted sharply to the right. And then in terms of partisan tactics, the party has embraced a no guardrail, smash mouth approach to partisanship that we've seen different incarnations of, whether it was Newt Gingrich in the 80s and 90s, the Tea Party, or then Trump. So that's a case where even though there were things Trump did that went well beyond what we saw with those predecessors, it came out of this particular era where Republican polarization came to mean something very different than it did even in the 1980s.
So let's talk about some of the history of this and listen to some tape, because you find threads of Trumpism in previous Republican presidents too. For example, here's Richard Nixon at a campaign rally in 1968, who, like Trump, made law and order a big theme of his political rise.
This is a nation of laws, and as Abraham Lincoln has said, no one is above the law, no one is below the law, and we're going to enforce the law, and Americans should remember that if we're going to have law and order.
That's Richard Nixon, and Trump wasn't the first outsider to govern with anti-government rhetoric. Here's Ronald Reagan at his inauguration in 1981.
In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
So, Julian, two examples there of a kind of long tradition in the Republican Party that kind of led up to Trump, right?
Right. And the law and order is the most complicated in that certainly with some of the Black Lives Matter protests, President Trump embraced that law and order rhetoric. Although, as one of our authors, Beverly Gage, says, he also directly attacked law enforcement institutions when they were investigating him. So in some ways, he started to break from that tradition when the law and the order turned against him. The anti-government philosophy that Reagan articulated was at the core of a lot of what the Trump presidency did. They cut taxes for wealthier Americans, moved forward with deregulation, and continued a multi-decade process of trying to dismantle what had been created from the New Deal to the Great Society.
Hmm. One more voice from longish ago, when you're pointing out that Trump represents a sort of successful continuation of hard right conservatism, it goes back to people like Arizona Senator Barry Goldwater, a Republican candidate for president. So here's Goldwater accepting the Republican nomination in 1964.
I would remind you that extremism in the defense of liberty is no vice.
Now, Goldwater, of course, lost that election to Lyndon Johnson. But what links him to Trump?
Well, that's the essence of how the party has changed. A lot of what Goldwater argued in 64, that the party should embrace extremism, that they shouldn't be restrained by norms that Washington thought would be important. By 2017, the Republican Party was in a place where that could be what the leadership of the entire party embraced. In 64, the country or the party wasn't ready for it. Goldwater gets defeated. In 2017, that is the Republican Party. So Goldwater is a case where the loser of the election set the template for what would happen to his party. And we saw that come true with President Trump.
Mm, really interesting. One of the points that you make is sort of the asymmetrical nature of warfare, if you will, between the two parties. You say both the Democrats and Republicans have left the center to a certain degree, but Republicans much more so. And at one point, you quote former Trump advisor Steve Bannon's great quote to filmmaker Michael Moore. He said, "Democrats prepare for a pillow fight, whereas Republicans come ready to deliver a head wound." So where does that leave these two parties as they battle each other going forward today?
Politically, they're in very different places. You have a Democratic Party that is still more divided internally. And you saw this with Joe Biden, President Biden, ultimately being the nominee as opposed to some of the candidates from the left. But you have a Democratic Party that is still playing by traditional rules of governing, and even to some extent, traditional rules of partisanship, and the Republicans are not. So there's a fundamental imbalance that very often leaves Democrats in a difficult position trying to figure out what to do, facing not only political attack, but dysfunction in government.
Mm. So Democrats didn't absorb Newt Gingrich's message. You say that he understood that politics was akin to warfare, not an understanding that Democrats necessarily have or they appear not to have it, I guess.
Look, Democrats can play hardball and they can be very partisan, but I think there's just a difference in what the parties are willing to do.
Right.
You still have Democrats more concerned with governing and with the health of government institutions. They are a pro-government party, so need to do that, where Republicans will just go much further in what they say, what they do, and the kind of gridlock they're willing to achieve, because on their end, that fits an anti-government philosophy. And so that's an imbalance that Democrats have to deal with.
Right. Last question. We only have about 10 seconds left. Trump hasn't formally declared that he's running again. When do you think he will? What's he waiting for?
I think if he does, he's waiting until after the midterms. He wants himself to be the story rather than the rest of the party.
All right. That's Julian Zelizer. He's a professor of history and public affairs at Princeton University. He edited the new book, The Presidency of Donald J. Trump. Julian, thanks as always. Great to have you.
Thanks for having me.